Welcome to season two of Translate This. As ever, this podcast is bringing you wonderful information about language, culture, life, and the hilarity of it all. If you're listening to this, that means that we didn't bore you on season one and you've come back to give us another try. But a few things have changed. So, producer Lauren, what is the biggest thing that's changed since season one?
Hello, everyone.
Oh, we can hear her. That's a huge thing. So welcome to season two, producer Lauren.
Thank you. For those of you who are listening to season one, I helped produce it, and now I'm a voice. So,
yep, she is joining our wonderful podcast. And we are also missing somebody that you may be listening for, Mr. Richard. Yeah, we love you, Richard. We know you're out there somewhere in the world of the expats.
A true wanderer.
True
third culture kid out there living his new third culture kid adult life.
Yes, he is. Yeah, TCAK,
aka TCK.
Yeah, there we go. But Richard is no longer on Translate This season, taking a hiatus into his own life of expatness.
We hope to see him back next season.
We really do. But we understand he has an amazing adventure ahead of him, and we're going to let him eventually tell you what that's all about. So for now, it's under the secret of the expat world. I'm sure it's going to be a fun story once he comes back to it. But what we wanted to do right now is just to give you some introduction of what is going to be going on season two, because we do have some amazing speakers lined up. We are going to be working with Secretary of State officials. We're going to be working with language experts coming out of Spain. We are going to be working with travel experts that are pretty famous on YouTube. And we'll be working with a lot of writers.
Right. Writers, a poetry.
Yes.
A new poetry author.
Yes, exactly. And some established European writers that happen also be living in Spain. And we have other people that are part of the Barbier culture. So what is Barbier? Barbier is the people that keep this podcast going. So Barbier International is producer Lauren and me, Melissa. It's our company, and we have a language services company that this year celebrates our 25th anniversary in the industry.
Yes, a family-owned business started by my abue, Melissa's mom.
Yep, and a pretty amazing abue at that. So
I was going to say, if you guys hear me saying Melissa, it's because I'm used to working with her, and at work, I don't say mom.
So yes.
Sometimes I'll say mom, sometimes I'll say Melissa.
Yeah, but it's a great situation, and we have a wonderful team, and we have just celebrated, or we're going to be celebrating 25 years, and we're going to be celebrating 6 years since we've opened up Barbier Guatemala.
Yeah,
and we'll be celebrating 3 years since we've opened up Barbier Spain.
Yeah,
so we really truly are a global company here, and right now we are in Spain, and we are recording from the luxurious dressing room of my home.
Yeah, closet.
The closet. Celebrating.
Most podcasters know the best room is the closet.
It really is. So that's where we're at in our glorious location.
Still in Galicia, though. I think a lot of listeners last year, they listened to you and Richard moving around a lot. So
yes, yes. So I actually have planted roots. Well, that's something that I think also is new for Barbier, but also in general for me on a personal level, that I've planted roots in Galicia. I have remodeled a home this last year out in the Ribeira Sacra wine country, and we are nestled in this beautiful area of Spain in what is known as Green Spain by a beautiful pair of rivers. One is the Miño and the other one is the Sil. And they are famous rivers in this area that basically create what Californians would know of Napa for there, or the Oregonians would know as the Willamette Valley. So we are in wine country of Spain. There's several wine countries of Spain.
Right.
For Galicia, we're in the area of one region of it. There are many. We're learning so much about wine now that we've been out here that we thought, there's nothing out here. Everyone hears about Rioja. Everyone hears about Tempranillo and Sherry. They think of Jerez and all of the different things that you think of with Spanish and sangria, right? But nobody knows that there are wines out here that resemble Pinot Noir, that resemble Chardonnay.
Yeah.
Resemble Pinot Grigio, resemble Sangiovese. I mean, there's just so many varietals here. And we will be having a podcast about that later. So enough about the wine talk. Let's do a little Q&A with producer Lauren. So producer Lauren, I know this is the first time you're fully being voiced on the podcast.
Yeah.
I have some questions for you.
I'm scared.
Okay. What's it like working with your family?
Difficult, but it's a love-hate relationship, you know? I have had a lot of practice. So for those of you that don't know, started working with my family business when I was a teenager, 15, 16, and then dropped out of high school, got my GED and started working full time when I was 17. And I've been here ever since. I'm 31 now. So I've had a lot of time to perfect learning how to work with your family members. I've worked with my mom, my dad, my brother, cousins, uncles, grandmothers. So it's very different than what you would expect. It's very fun a lot of times, but as any family, you know, you can get in discussions. And I think the hardest thing is learning how to separate work and family life. But we do a really good job. We've been to the Association of Language Companies, a conference called the ALC. And there was a panel about how is it working with your family business. And we are probably in the top 5% of families that get along.
And that we haven't killed each other yet?
Yeah. I mean, there's some days that we definitely open up the whiskey bottle afterwards or have some of those wines. But for the most part, I think you have to learn how to separate work and family. You can be upset with something that's going on in your family life, but you drop it when you get to the door, and the same thing when you leave. So I don't know. For me, I'm probably the most comfortable, I would say.
I'm going to say that's a very true statement. You work with your mom.
Just because I grew up here.
Right. You work with your dad. You work with your boyfriend.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. And you have a very, so some might think listening to this, like, oh, the poor girl is caged in, you know, free Lauren.
Help me. Help me.
We need to free Lauren. We need to free her. But, you know, you've had some very challenging things for a young woman early in your life. And if you don't mind, I'm going to touch on that a little bit so the listeners can understand how incredibly resilient you are as a person. When you were 19, you had a very serious car accident that pretty much almost took your life. And you did step away from the business and you did pursue working in a different industry that you have a passion for. You want to tell the listeners a little bit about that side of you?
Yeah. So as I think most people, when you have a near-death experience, you focus on what makes you the happiest. And for me, that's animals. I'm a typical millennial that has no children and only pets as my kids.
Yeah, they're your children for sure.
So I've always loved the vet world. I always grew up watching Animal Planet, veterinary shows, or Animal Cops. All of that good stuff. And I really thought I would be in that field. And so I started working for a small veterinary clinic owned by a single vet, kind of something out of a Disney movie, to be honest, because it was kind of like back in the day where you go and help the one veterinarian in town.
Oh, yeah.
And there was another veterinarian technician there as well. And I learned everything from both of them. And they were amazing to work with. And I learned so much. I got to shadow the surgeries and shadow all the work. Of course, I didn't have the expertise to continue in that field without going back to school for that. So I had to make a decision. And with this situation, you know, in the vet world, I'm sure a lot of vet techs know this, but when you work for a big veterinarian, something maybe like Petco or PetSmart, there's a lot of shit that goes down in those that are, it's not nice. You learn the dirty side of the vet world, and it's all about pushing medications and pushing flea medicine. And not that I'm not for that. Of course, my animals have all of that, but it's not about the health of the client that comes in. It's about making the most money. And I didn't like that. So while I worked for this small clinic that I did, I never had to do any of that. And I just helped, help them run and keep the clients happy and the pets happy. So I would suggest that anyone that wants to go into that field to keep that in mind, you know, something else, you know, a little dark, but I'm a dark person, is I had to bag all the dogs that we had to put down and cats and animals. And it was,
that's rough.
Really sad to have to, put them in plastic bags because they're biohazards at that point, and you can't just leave them out. Yeah. And so we had companies that would come and pick them up, but you still had to bag all these animals, and it was difficult. So
you're 19 at this age when you're doing this. That's really tough. You're still a child.
Yeah. So, I did that for about a year, and we had some drama going on actually at the company at that time. We were much smaller at Barbie International.
Yeah, we did.
And so I decided to come back and help my family, of course. And, but it was a good experience. I mean, I learned a lot about myself, and I also, you know, got to work for someone else, which I think is really important for those that grow up in family businesses, to get out there and get experience and work with people in the service industry.
Right. And you're still in the services industry working for language services.
Yeah. I mean, I get to work with a lot of different people, tons of cultures all over the world. So that's where my heart is as well. That's my other big love, is travel and culture. So I'm happy now that I can just have my pets at home and go in that direction. So,
and what pets you do have?
Yes. Well, it's always a circus at my home, wherever I am. I thought I'd never have this many animals, and then
I'm sorry, I'm laughing. I know what's coming next.
But yeah, right now I think I'm good. I have three dogs and two cats, so I think that's good.
I hope so.
I had three cats and three dogs, but the third cat ended up needing to be more of a farm cat, so lives here with mom and dad, on the farm.
You know, and I would much rather you be dropping off a cat or a dog than a baby and say, here, take this child.
Yeah.
So I am a little bit happier about that. But, you know, going back to working with your family, it's not for everyone. And your brother, he went on to work for somebody else, but he works with us sometimes as a vendor, and he'll stay up close to the business that way. We have some cousins, like you said, working in and out of the company for us, but it's not for everyone. And it definitely takes a certain person to work with your family, so that way you don't hate them at the end of the day, and that you can still have a very good relationship. But I think also, to your credit, Producer Lauren, I mean, and I think maybe I'll just stop calling you Producer Lauren, because we're going to change your title in season two. You're just Lauren.
I think I'm just going to be Lauren.
You're Lauren now. So, Lauren, I really do credit your early wisdom in life. You just have always had an innate sense of who you are, and you really resonate that. And I see that when we go to events in the language industry, conferences, or if we go visit clients, and I see how people respond to you. And it's a much smoother moment than I ever had at your age. Like, I remember I struggled. It was hard for me. And I always loved sales and marketing, but people were questioning my authenticity because I started off as a singer in the entertainment industry. So they kind of like were like, is she just trying to like say what we want to hear? Is she trying to be entertaining, or does she really mean what she's saying? So I always realize that it does come across. Maybe I could sound disingenuous, but you know, it's because I do like to please people. And so that, you know, it can work against me. Whereas you, like you said, you're a very straight shooter. So in our industry, because of culture, because of always being aware of things. And again, it's my TCK-ness, wanting to please people. But for you, you always had a sense of who you are, regardless of what you've done. And I always appreciated that. So I think one of the reasons that it works well, you working with your family, is because of how you are as a person, just as in any situation. So it's a great thing.
Very kind of you. I feel like I'm awkward. So I always tell people that I'm sorry if I'm awkward, but you know, I think when you get older, especially, you know, for me, when I say that, I'm sure others are laughing out there because I'm only 31. But when you're in your 30s, you start to really not give a fuck.
Yeah.
And I think that is going to really play out well for me, because I don't want to feel like I'm being awkward anymore. And I think when you're in your 20s, especially a young woman growing up in a male-dominated industry,
right,
of business, mm-hmm. that you want to sound believable. You want to look like the part. You want to be respected. You don't want them to take you for a fool. I don't know.
Right, so, right. No.
Especially because I never finished college, and mm-hmm. I worked in the company full time. I think.
But that's college in itself, though. That's, yeah. You were trained on the job. I mean, and that's incredible.
It's a trade school.
It is.
But at the same time, you know, people judge everything on paper. So that's I wanted true. To prove in person what I could do. And I have a little bit of a workaholicness about me, just to make sure people don't forget that I know what I'm doing. Or at least I believe, like to believe that. So
do you think, though, that you work super hard to prove what you do because of who you are in the company? Are you fearful of that Nepo baby time?
100%. I've been accused of nepotism before by close friends.
Mm.
And that's not fun to hear, you know? And I realize now that it came from a place of, I believe, insecurity on their end. Because they didn't have what I had, and you know, they you know, people are shitty sometimes, and so looking back on it, I realized that they were threatened because I was coming into the company and they didn't want anyone in front of them or in their way, because they wanted to take over the company, or they wanted to be in charge, and they knew that a close family member was coming in and had all the passion and the dedication. And so I think that they saw me as a threat in that way. But especially working now with a lot of people my same age and being their boss, it's been a transition I've had to go through and accept that some people are truly there for me.
Right.
And others, I can kind of sense that they play nice, you know, they just want to get on my good side just to try to maybe fly under the radar. So, it's a difficult position to be in.
Yeah.
But I think that if I do my work well and I get good scores and get good reviews, then that says everything. And that's been the blessing that we've done some anonymous
360 reviews.
Yeah, we call them 360 reviews. And they're anonymous Google forms that people fill out about everyone in the company. And reading those, it made me completely feel secure that I am on my right path and I'm doing the right thing. And people do respect me. So
you got the top scores this year.
I'm hoping to, you know, I mean, I don't know what that says though, right? Like top scores, it's good, but at the same time, maybe I'm too nice.
I don't know.
No, but I don't want to, I don't personally like talking about myself too much, which is why I was the producer season one, because I got to listen to Richard and Melissa talk. But I do want to give the audience a sense of who I am moving forward in this season. So this is probably the most you'll get from me, is this first episode.
I'm excited because, you know, it's one of those things where it's a rite of passage, but also I know that people do like to know who is on the call, and they like to know who's going to be interviewing other people and what their experience have been. So Going back on season one, you know, we were talking about a variety of things. And one of the things we discussed was the living in the United States versus living in Spain. And I think the perspective that you have that's different than Richard and me is that, you know, we are in our 50s, you're in your 30s. Richard and I married, and I'm just going to just spill it, soon to be married, Richard. That's one of the reasons why he's not here. He's going off to get married. Woo!
Yeah.
But I think, you know, that's one of the things you are here as you came over in a committed relationship, but not married.
Yeah.
At younger, no children,
divorced.
And that's, I mean, millennial versus Gen X. And I want to know, what do you think about your home country versus now this being your home country? Like, what can you tell other young people that are thinking about changing countries at your age?
Well, yeah, I have always loved traveling. Thanks to my mom and dad, they scrubbed their pennies together, literally, to take us on a Rick Steves kind of adventure when I was 9.
That was fun.
And we went to Italy. And that blew my door open as a person. Even though I was a small, tiny little human at that time, mm-hmm. I didn't realize how big the world was. I was growing up in North Carolina at that time, and just everything was about basketball for me. All I wanted to do is practice, and, you know, everything I did was basketball or soccer. So,
yeah.
Then opening the door of culture and language, and it definitely instilled or just opened a completely new part in my brain. So I always knew that I wanted to travel after that, especially, you know, watching more documentaries about all these different places. I grew up knowing my grandmother was Guatemalan. That's about it. She would cook at home sometimes some traditional Guatemalan food, but she came from more of a background of when she immigrated to the U.S. When she was 18, 19.
Yeah.
That, you know, America is the place where dreams are made, and speak English and forget about her past in a way. So
yeah, very much.
I grew up not speaking Spanish and just knowing some basics. And yeah, I got divorced when I was 26. I mean, you can call it, I guess, high school sweethearts, but again, I dropped out. So I met him when I was 17 and dated for 7 years, got married. And a year later, I left and I was a wreck. I was in a really bad place. So we had an opportunity to open an office in Guatemala, and I knew I had family there. I knew I had roots. So it was kind of like an eat, pray, love movement.
It really, really was. Yeah. I'm hoping that the listeners are getting this, because I've likened your whole situation to that. And 26 years old, volunteers and says, I'm going to go to a country now. Don't really know much about. I kind of know a couple cousins.
Yeah, knew no one except the people that I worked with down there when I visited twice.
Yeah.
But I felt like it was a moment that I would regret if I didn't do.
Yeah, yeah.
And
you didn't just leave your relationship. You left the country.
Yeah, I mean, I left best friends behind. Yeah. I left everything.
You left your whole life behind.
I really... looking back on it, I don't even know how I had the strength to do that.
Yeah.
But I think I was in such a fucked up, sad place that I didn't register. It didn't register what I was doing was so crazy.
No, I wouldn't say crazy.
For an American, I think a traditional American moving to a country that you don't know the language, you don't know anyone, it's kind of like, whoa,
what is she doing? It's extreme moving. We're going to call it extreme moving.
But again, those... experiences I had when I was younger traveling, I knew that I wanted to travel. I knew I wanted to live in another country. And so this was the opportunity. That was it. So I moved to Guatemala, lived there for 2 years.
And the pandemic hits.
Yeah, I lived there for about a year when COVID hit. And so...
What was that like?
I got stuck there. Ah. I mean, it was that or move back to Portland and just be by myself in Portland. So yeah. Why not be... Yeah. I was dating. I had a boyfriend, the current boyfriend now.
Because we were already in Los Angeles at that point.
Yeah, everyone moved from Oregon. Yeah.
We opened our other office in Los Angeles. Yeah. And we decided we needed to be there for a while. And we sold everything in Portland except the original...
And I made some friends, area. You know, in Guatemala, and I was in Guatemala City. So I was in the city and I had a car down there. And there's a lots of ups and downs of that.
You drove in Guatemala.
Oh, yeah.
Please tell me about this.
You know, and it's funny because I just got back about a month ago from visiting, which was great. And I feel like the driving has gotten better there. I was like, oh, it's kind of sad because like I used to just the you have to just be so aggressively defensive that you cut people off. And like, that's just like the norm.
They make their own lanes.
Yeah. So you have three. It's any developing country that has traffic. I feel like it's the same everywhere. Yeah. But
Rome's pretty bad, too.
Yeah. I mean. I feel like it really sharpened my driving skills. I've always loved driving and I used to drive, you know, ride motorcycles. So yeah. it was a great experience. I started learning Spanish. I started integrating with the culture, definitely had culture shock and then I got over that. And then, yeah, it got really bad with COVID because as everywhere in the world, it was scary and no one knew what was going on. And the regulations that Guatemala City had, you couldn't leave the city without getting a permit. So, we were kind of just, you know, gridlocked for a while. And
you were there with Richard during COVID.
Yeah, Richard was down there too. So Richard and I, we got the chance to work together down there and live together down there.
He was in Antigua and you were in the capital.
He was in the capital for a while and then he moved to Antigua, which honestly I probably was a smart move because I think living in Antigua during COVID was a better place to be than in the city.
Yeah.
Especially I was in kind of a gentrified area and once COVID hit it went right back to where it was before it was
warehouses and yeah, crickets and rats. Yeah.
So I was in Zone 4. And it was great. I mean, if you go there today, go to Zone 4. It's my favorite area in Guatemala in the city.
It's very hip.
Yeah. It's definitely, it has both sides. Of course, you have to be careful. I mean, that's just common sense with those.
It's a big
things.
City. You got to be big. A big city, you got to be careful.
You got to be aware of your surroundings and not dress like Rick Steves when you're down there. That'd probably be the best advice.
Love you, Rick, though.
Yeah, I love you, but don't dress like him when you go down there because you will get mugged. So, but I love it. I mean, I always have a special place for Guatemala. I think it really
you let it into your heart. You let Guatemala in your heart.
It made me a better person.
That's great to
hear. It made me think about what I wanted in life and I mean, the weather's beautiful, of course. It's eternal, the land of eternal spring.
Right.
But yeah, so then my boyfriend, though, he, on the contrary, was ready to leave. And he was just like me. He wanted to see the world. He's already traveled.
But not the U.S.
Yeah, well, of course, right? I think any Latino or
Hispanic
person that wants to go to the U.S., they think they see, like, the violence that goes on with the racism in the U.S. So there's everywhere in the entire world there's racism. I think people don't understand that. So even in Guatemala there was racism. So it's different everywhere you go. But he talked about it today. You know, he's like, I don't want to go there because of the mass shootings and the way that the police and the government treat people that look like me. So So, I mean, we even tried to get just a traveler's visa for him to visit my family in Oregon, and they denied it in Guatemala. That was when Trump was in office, and they really shut down the borders heavily.
Yeah, it was specifically very, very closed down.
Towards people from Central America. Mm-hmm. So,
because of the border crisis.
Yeah. And we knew that that wasn't, we didn't want to get married just to go to the US either, you know.
Well, so you weren't ready. You were just out of a divorce. The last thing you want to do is get married.
Yeah. So we thought about what our options were because we knew that we wanted to travel. We knew that we wanted to be more worldly. He really wants to go to Japan. We thought about living in Japan. We thought about living in Norway. I've always loved Spain. And we actually visited Spain together while we were living in Guatemala. Yeah. So we did that and we scoped it out. And we said, you know, why not? It was an easier path for him as far as citizenship goes versus the 10 years I would have to wait. He'd only have to wait 2 years.
Yeah.
Which he's any day now should be getting his answer.
Passport. Yeah. Yeah.
For his European citizenship. So. So living here, we lived in Madrid for a very short while, and then we moved out to Galicia. We're actually both in Vigo, which is on the northwest coast, on the very coast.
Beautiful, beautiful city.
It's absolutely gorgeous. I kind of am...
like the San Francisco.
I don't even want to gatekeep it because it's such a cool city that people need to visit it, but it's on the complete opposite side of, you know, Barcelona, so right on the other side.
Yeah.
On the Atlantic, hour north of Porto. So
they call it California.
Yeah.
Galicia.
It's beautiful.
California. Yeah. It's amazing.
It really reminds me of like Seattle or Portland back in the early 90s, maybe. Right. I mean, I was born in 93, so it's not like I know, but from what I've seen and people talk about in the pictures and
San Francisco, Portland, Seattle. When they were beautiful, beautiful cities still.
But to answer your question, leaving the U.S. and living here, of course, I don't really miss the U.S. other than the crazy amount of convenience that it provides. I mean, you can, anything you want, you can find a place that has it in any major city in the U.S. You don't get that really anywhere else in the U.S. That is... I miss that, and I definitely miss the national parks
and the
amount of land that is kept specifically for people that like to go outdoors.
Right, right.
Here in Spain, it's actually illegal to do wild camping, which is funny that they call it wild camping.
Yet they have a Camino that runs every different direction through its entire country to get out to Santiago de Compostela.
I would love it if you could camp along the Camino.
Oh my gosh.
You can't. So you have to stay in the, I forgot what they're actually called.
The albergues.
Yeah.
Or, you know, basically a hostel.
Yeah.
But small hotels.
But I know during COVID, they had a couple bad bed bug infestations in those along the routes. So,
yes, they did.
You know, I'd rather have my own tent and a sleeping bag. But that's probably what I miss about the U.S. I mean, I grew up mainly in Oregon and right outside of Portland and in Portland. And then for a small amount of time in North Carolina. So the nature was my backyard.
Right.
I loved it. Which is why living in Vigo, it's a very, very rainy area of Spain, a very green area that also has a lot of hiking and outdoors, which is one of the reasons why I think we all as a family
we love
here.
It. Yeah, we love it.
But I don't think I can even register what it's like to pick this as my home country. It still feels I don't know when it will go away, but I always feel like I'm an outsider. Always.
Well, that's going to always be the case, right?
I immigrated here.
Right.
It's not my home country. I'm 100% don't like using the word expat because it's not what I am. I'm an immigrant. So.
Good for you.
Yeah, I don't know. For now, I'm really happy here. Luis and I are trying to figure out if we want to buy something here or once he gets his citizenship, maybe we'll buy something in Norway or Germany or I don't know. So
I mean, Japan still could be calling.
Yeah, I don't think I could live in Japan.
No,
I don't think I can. I've never been, but just from what I hear, I think the culture is a little too opposite from who I am.
From who you are. Yeah.
Yeah. So
that's a good observation to know.
It's nothing about them. It's about me.
Yeah.
I would be a disruption to their culture, which is why I love the Spanish culture, because you can be loud. You can be who you are. You can Yeah, it's very it's a very individualistic, probably one of the most individualistic places in Europe.
Even though it's incredibly homogenous.
I was going to say, but you have to find the pockets to find that.
You do.
Because most of the country, it's kind of like the U.S. Anywhere mm-hmm. you go outside of a major city,
yeah,
it's the opposite. So
I still get tripped up on watching families on Sunday, which, you know, on Sunday, everything's closed except for restaurants and cafes. And so the families come out and they walk along the pedestrian streets, and the children are all dressed in the exact same identical clothes. It's like uniforms.
I thought they were twins when I first moved here.
Yeah, I don't get
it. And then you realize they're not twins, mm-mm. that they just buy matching outfits for their children.
Right. And so that's how homogenous it is.
Yeah, it's very interesting. There's a lot of things here that are, obviously, they're going to be different, but very, very fun to learn about. And
I mean, you were in Lyon with us when we lived there. You got to stay with us for a few months. And you saw what Southern France was like. I mean, compare your experience of Lyon in a pretty, you know, about the same size city as Vigo.
Yeah.
And both, you know, near water, both hip, both younger generation.
Lyon had much more going on, though.
So, okay, there you go. There's the truth coming out of her mouth.
Yeah, I mean, I think that Lyon is very... and France in general is very art-centric.
Yeah.
And, I mean, Spain is as well.
You've got a lot of public art in Vigo.
But there's just a lot more going on in Lyon. I think Galicia is still quiet. It's still quiet.
Yeah.
But it's really gaining. I mean, I just went to a small concert yesterday with a friend I made here.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Well, not yesterday, last week. But I saw a band that we didn't know, and the main guy ended up being from LA.
Oh, that's amazing.
And it's like, what are you doing here in Vigo?
That's what we're asking.
And
all
he
of
asked us.
Us,
what are you guys doing here? And we said living. And he was like, oh wow. So I think Vigo is getting more popular.
Right.
Specifically, I think Vigo in general is getting more popular out of Galicia.
Yeah.
As the city to visit.
And the Spaniards are moving to Green Spain now,
yeah,
too.
Yeah. So I don't know. For me, you know, there's a joke, and I'm sure that a lot of people that are on social media, you know, you see this joke come across your feed that I'm 31, but I'm still a teenager. You know, I'm still worried if I get pregnant right now, it's going to be a teen pregnancy. That's the mindset I feel like a lot of my friends here and that I've made and my partner, we still feel like we're 19, you know, and I don't feel like I'm a 31-year-old choosing to move my life here, like, in a mature way. It feels more like I'm out of college. I want to visit the world.
Yeah.
And I think that our generation, some of our generation, of course, everyone's different, but mm-hmm. a lot of the people that travel, they still feel really young. They don't feel like this is a stopping point for them. It's still kind of like a point of blooming and...
You're not sure. It sounds to me like you're not sure. You love where you're at, but you don't know if it's going to be the place.
Yeah, you know, and I've talked to my boyfriend also about living at some time, not for a long period of time, but I really want to go back to North Carolina because Charlotte has completely blown up.
Oh, yeah.
Raleigh as well.
Yeah. Shout out to North Carolina.
Yeah, and so I really want to go and visit and see the difference because when I was growing up, Charlotte was tiny.
Yeah, it was.
It's like 200,000, 300,000 people.
Banking capital of the South, but that was about it.
Yeah, and now I think that they're projecting. I watched something the other day, which who knows if this is even accurate because it's on social media, but they're predicting by 2030 that Charlotte, the downtown area, will get close to 900,000 people.
That is a lot of people for there. Yeah, that definitely was not there. No. When we were living in North Carolina, we were living in a county that the entire county had 35,000 people.
Yeah, we lived in a town of like 1,300 people.
Yeah,
so
tiny.
So it was different. I mean, it's still the South, but I think that, you know, Savannah, Georgia, those type of mm-hmm. vibes are starting to really pop up. And I like that. I've always liked Asheville.
Right.
I definitely want to go and explore those areas, but not anytime now because the inflation is crazy. When I went,
oh goodness,
I had an LAX layover. and I had a London layover, and I got a Manhattan in London, and it was £15 for a Manhattan.
It's like, that's $18-19.
Yeah. And when we were in Portland last year, I got a cocktail and it was $18.
$18 Negroni.
What the fuck?
Yeah. I about freaked out.
You want to know?
My pizza was less money than my cocktail.
And you want to know what happened when I went to the concert the last week? What? I went and I got a double pour of whiskey and he filled up the entire glass. €5
See, now your whole
that's why I live here.
Group are going to move here.
Yeah,
it is. You know, it's not quite Prague of the 80s where when we were young in our 20s, everyone said, move to Prague. It's so cheap. I still think that's probably Albania. We're hearing information that Albania, Kosovo, Herzegovina, and parts of still of Croatia, Montenegro, that that is still very inexpensive living. Georgia, another place to live unexpectedly that could be really cool to live. And you can live there.
Richard spent some time in Georgia.
He spent some time and he let us know. You can live there as an American for an entire year under a very simple visa and you can work there. I mean, you can just...
Ooh, Japan just is launching...
Korea. Yeah, South Korea.
They're launching the
digital nomad.
Digital nomad visa.
Yep. And for those of you who don't know this, for thinking about hopping around countries, both Japan and South Korea are launching a 2-year digital nomad visa. You are able to go live and work there as long as you are able to show that you have clients outside of those countries that you are working for remotely. So if you have a company that employs you now that does not care what time zone you're on, does not care where you live, you can go live in South Korea and Japan right now.
I know Japan, the amount of money you have to make is a little bit higher because it's Japan. I think it's like something like $60,000 US.
It's expensive.
You have to show that you make that just to survive, you know.
And that's like rich people in Spain making $60,000.
Oh my gosh, yeah. So, I mean, it's you have to do your research about it. But it's a great start for Japan because before the visas there were hard to get.
Yeah.
Very hard to get. If you were not a student, good luck.
Yeah. Well, so. And two, the interesting thing, if anyone wants to watch, this is just a random throw in. Rotten Tomatoes just gave Shogun, the new production, a 100% score on the new production of Shogun. And for those of you who don't know what that's about, it's Japanese samurai history with the Silk Trail and the Portuguese. And it's worth watching. History is worth understanding because you can understand culture more. But I think, Lauren, what you're doing in terms of recommending your generation to move, be mobile, experience life.
Yeah, it's the best thing I ever decided to do.
That is... golden.
No regrets.
No regrets. And just we're going to get ready to wrap this first episode up for season one. But what I wanted to let you know is that specifically what Lauren was talking about feeling like a teenager, I just watched a little video clip of George Harrison, one of the original Beatles, when he was 57. He says, I feel no different than when I was 17.
Yeah.
And he said, you know, this idea that you're going to grow up and you're going to feel old. The only thing that changes is your body ages, but your mind and your spirit stay young.
Yeah.
And that's when I think also happens for even me being a Gen X and being super cynical. I still feel that way. I forget that I am 57. I forget that I am, physically different than what I was when I was 27. And what I do know is that the travel and the experience of going and working in different locations with different people and different cultures, even just being exposed to different cultures within the states that I mostly grew up in the United States, that really opened my whole mind to the possibilities of the entire world and how people relate to one another. And at the end of it all, right, Lauren? I mean, that's what it's about. It's getting along with people.
Oh, yeah. I think that's one of the one nice perks that we will always have as Americans is we're known as the friendly Americans.
True.
And I've had to learn to smile a little less on the streets and don't look like a weirdo here because they're like, why are you smiling at me? I do not know you.
Exactly.
And so now it's funny because anytime I go back to the U.S., I wonder if they think I'm just, you know, I have like resting bitch face or something now. because I know that's never, I'm always smiling regardless. But yeah, I mean, I think it's something that if you have the opportunity to, you should 100% take it. If you're in a place where you don't know what you want, you should travel at the very least.
Yeah.
There's lots of websites. There's lots of people out there on social media that can lead you in the right direction for finding the cheapest flight, mm-hmm. how to fly, mm-hmm. where to stay. There's so much research out there now that when we were growing up, we only had Rick Steves.
Right.
And he was our, you know, the gatekeeper to Europe and everywhere yeah. in the world. So yeah. now we have so many people that are doing it, and influencers and non-influencers. I mean, it doesn't even matter who you are.
Right.
Go out there and enjoy if you want to go just for the brunch that you see from mm-hmm. your favorite influencer, or if you want to go for the museums.
Exactly.
Or if you want to go sit in a park.
Yeah.
The good thing is that it's
all available. All of that's
there for you.
It's there. It's
depending
there.
On where you want to go in the world. I mean, take the opportunity, rub those pennies together. I think it's the best thing that, you know, my mom and dad ever did for me, because look where I am today. I never yep. thought I would be in a city where I didn't even know. Like, anytime I say I live in Vigo, they're like, where's that? And I tell them Galicia, where's that? North of Porto, where's that? And I just say Northwest Spain. And that's where yeah. I you know, land on.
Yeah. And then 9 times out of 10, you say Northwest Spain and they're like, oh, Barcelona.
We're
like,
yeah.
No,
yeah.
Wrong coast. Off the Atlantic.
Wrong Northwest.
Yeah, exactly. Not the Northeast. Well, I this has been a pleasure today. And I know that our listeners probably are very excited to know that you'll be a part of season 2 moving forward here at Translate This. You will be bringing us topics I know that you want to bring and host onto.
Yeah.
So we're looking forward to Lauren taking the reins and bringing in, and for me, responding to her and not knowing anything that she's going to be talking about. So in the tradition of season 1, when Lauren will be hosting the podcast, I will have no clue as to what the topic will be. And when I am hosting the podcast, she will not have a clue, or at least she might know the guest, but she'll have no idea what we're going to talk about. So it's going to continue the wonderful tradition because we have fun doing it. Yeah. And I do want to do one little celebrity name drop shout out to a podcast that we didn't even know was doing it the same way
we're doing it.
You know, but Smartless. Anytime any
shout
of you.
Shout out to Smartless.
Smartless. I can be on that show. Oh, amazing.
Yeah.
But yeah, we would love Smartless to.
Of course.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm a huge fan of all of them. But
huge fan.
I was just, when I went to Guatemala, all I was listening to were all their new episodes that I hadn't listened to in a while. So
it's pretty great.
They do a very similar content where none of them know who the guest is that's coming on.
And, and they tend to prove how silly each of them are.
No, they're great. I love them.
Well, this has been, again, another episode of Translate
This
with
Lauren
and Melissa. And stay tuned because we have some amazing, amazing, wonderful guests coming up and some great topics. So we are always grateful for you listening, and we will be in touch with you soon. Take care.
Have a good day, everyone. Thank you.